We made this.
Back everyone to the XCast. The truth is in here. I'm your host for this latest patron roundtable, Tony Black, and I'm really delighted to be joined by three first-time XCast guests and some relatively new patrons for a chat all about, obviously, what else but the X-Files. Firstly, I'm joined by Eleanor Butler. Eleanor, welcome to the show, and why don't you tell us where you're hailing from today?
I am in the UK, in the East Midlands, and I'm very, very excited to be here. Thank you.
The East Midlands. Now, obviously, you obviously have been able to tell I'm from the West Midlands originally.
Yes. So oftentimes when I'm listening to you, it's very familiar.
It is a small world, isn't it?
Seriously.
That's crazy. That is crazy. Next up, Simon Hodgson. Welcome. Great to have you on.
Thank you very much.
Now you're also UK, I think, aren't you? Whereabouts are you?
I am indeed. I'm from Reading in Berkshire.
Lovely. You are now, because this podcast is all about where I live, because I'm making it all about me. You are geographically probably a bit closer to me now because I'm in Wiltshire now. So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Reading. Awesome. Nice place to live.
Yeah, it's not too bad. It has, like many places, it has its positives and negatives, but there's far more positives, I think.
Cool. Good stuff. And lastly, Jessica Miskelly. And you're a bit further away, Jessica, aren't you, I think, than the rest of us?
Just a bit.
Where are you dialing in from?
I'm in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales, in southeast Australia.
Now, am I going to be really rude here, Eleanor, and guess that you're Australian, or are you from New Zealand? Because I detect an accent.
Yes, I'm Australian too, but I've been in the UK for a long time, that my accent has softened considerably. It's stronger when I'm over there, and then over here it's weaker. And then when I'm in Birmingham, it's more Birmingham.
Yeah, that happened to my wife as well, because she was from Wiltshire, and then when she came to live in Birmingham, she started being a bit more like this, which is how we speak in Birmingham.
That's how it works.
That's how it works, yeah. But were you from, because I'm going to be that awful person now and assume, you know when someone says, oh, you're from that place, you must know such and such. I'm sure you and Jessica know each other then, because you're both from Australia,
Yeah, that is also how it works, yeah.
Yeah. Jessica, yeah, you must have met Eleanor in the past, obviously.
Yeah, we walked past each other in the street.
So what's New South Wales like then? Is it a nice place to live?
I like it. I've lived in a lot of places in Australia, and I've stayed here the longest, so I guess it's pretty good.
Ah, cool. Okay. I'd love to go. I would genuinely love to go to Australia one day. Absolutely. So, yeah, maybe. Maybe one day once, the alien virus has naffed off, but, we'll see. anyway, thanks, guys. It's so lovely to speak to you all, because we chat, on the patron department area, which anyone listening to, a lot of people listening to this will be in. So it's so nice to actually connect with you. And in this episode, we picked a topic. We're going to talk about newbie X-Files, as in episodes of the series you could introduce to someone who hadn't seen the show, basically. So we've picked three choices each. We've gone back and forth on this. Jessica, you made me laugh when you said Tony will pick Pusher, so I'm going to avoid that one. So I'm going to have picked Pusher.
One less I had to think about.
Yeah. I will reveal that now. Of course, I've picked Pusher, but we'll get to that. But we picked three. We're going to go round robin, round our virtual table, and discuss what we picked and why these are great choices to turn X-Files noobs into dedicated X-Files files with the PH, the files. So that's basically it. We're just going to go around and chat and see where we end up. So let's start. Let's do this in the order we've kind of introduced ourselves in. So it's back onto you, Eleanor.
Okay.
What's your first? What is your first choice for your newbie X-File?
So I have overthought this way too much. but my...
You're not alone.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, me too.
with 11 seasons, hey. But my first choice was Squeeze for a couple of reasons initially. The first is I think you need to include a season one if you're going to recommend the show to new people because it is so iconic. The second reason is it was the first Monster of the Week episode. And actually, when I watched it for this, I was so impressed by how much of the dynamics that we see for the rest of the series run are already there, particularly around the way they partner, the chemistry between them, the setup of the X-File, the complexity of it. It's all there. It's not a show that's finding its way in episode three. And the third main reason is, in my overthinking, I went to a group of friends and asked them, what would they recommend? And a couple of them said Squeeze was the one that really got them hooked. So,
yeah,
you know, that fits the brief.
Yeah, no, that's I completely get that. I think Squeeze is such an iconic one for all those reasons you've said, I think, because obviously, you know, it is the first Monster of the Week episode. And I don't know about you guys, whenever I go back, and obviously I've been rewatching some of the later seasons. Whenever I go back and watch now, I do always really get more out of the standalone, you know, episodes. I do get more out of these.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
I wonder why that is. I mean, like, is it that we just recognise that there is something a bit more, you know, streamlined about the whole idea and the with these more contained stories like Squeeze that make it more appealing? I don't know.
I think it's a case of if you haven't... you know, if you're not too up on the mythology of the show to begin with, it's an easy avenue into it, isn't it, really? Depending on what the story is about, of course, but it's each has their own tastes and things. But I think that's the major pull of these Monsters of the Week type stories, really.
I feel like they can explore so many different dimensions as well. And I'm doing this rewatch at the moment and I'm up to halfway through season five, and I've noticed that in the Myth Arc episodes, Mulder and Scully certainly have set roles that they fall back into every single time, or most times anyway, whereas in the Monsters of the Week there are no boundaries at all, and so you can take the story wherever you want it to go, and therefore you can take the character development of you know, the two agents anywhere as well. So there's a lot more depth to some of those episodes, whereas the Myth Arc has fantastic stories. There is a structure that the characters and the plot falls within.
It goes back to the question, the accessibility, doesn't it? I mean, this is the whole thing. You know, as we're picking newbie X-Files, there is something about Squeeze that just has all of the composite elements of the X-Files, you know, to be able to say to somebody, this is essentially what it is, you know.
Yeah.
Two sides of the coin, something weird out there, they're investigating, they're butting heads with local officials who don't believe in the paranormal, you know. It really does boil it all up, and it's amazing. It's episode like three.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's also the episode where Scully feels she's figuring out how she fits into this. You know, there's a couple of comments around, oh, you won't have to be Mrs. Spooky anymore and so on. And you can see her in this episode really weighing up, what am I going to do here? I'm at a crossroads. And it's where she figures out, no, she's in with Mulder. She's intrigued by his arguments. She likes him personally. She recognises that he's got integrity. And her going through that process, again, opens that door of accessibility for the viewers, I think, as well.
It makes sense. It's a great choice. It's a great choice to kick us off with, really. So over to you, Simon. Better that. What's your one? What's your choice?
Well, no pressure, eh?
No pressure.
Well, again, I'm going to go back to season one because that's when, you know, it tends to be the season, obviously, you tend to want to introduce someone to a new show like this. And for that, I've gone with the episode Space. No, I'm joking.
Come on.
I have actually picked the episode Ice.
Do you know what, though? I wish you'd gone for Space properly and tried to actually explain, like, why that would be great.
I don't think there's anyone on this godforsaken planet that can explain many of the plot inaccuracies of Space, to be quite honest with you, Tony. But
true. Ice is a better choice.
That's for another podcast, I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Main reasons for picking this one, really. it's a great one for getting an insight into the early characterization of Mulder and Scully, in that we see how far they'll go to earn each other's trust. I mean, there's a few scenes in it which long fans of the show will know, you know, with the standoff scene, and they're sort of aiming loaded guns on each other, along with checking for spots on each other and sort of reaffirming the mantra that you may not be who you are. That's that type of thing. It's,
we're not,
you know, it's it,
who
the
app.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not a difficult story or plot to follow. It's engaging, and you know, it's got some memorable dialogue, just like you just mentioned there, which of course Scully at the end of it repeats it. You know, so it's, but yeah, it is. It's a very good 45 minutes of TV, I think.
It's got a really, you know, great atmosphere in addition to
absolutely
the story. Yeah, it really just creates a mood that continues all the way through.
And anything that Morgan and Wong, you know, write is just fantastic anyway. So, you know, you're always on a winner when Morgan and Wong are involved, I think.
Yeah, mood is exactly it, Jessica, there. I think you're absolutely right. It's got, I think it's the first X-Files episode to really immerse you in something like that. I suppose it's because they're in that contained environment. It's the first time they put them in that contained environment where there's sort of no escape. And I wonder if this is a good newbie X-Files as well. Even though, I suppose on a format basis, it's slightly different from, say, something like Squeeze, where it's a more procedural kind of thing. But because it's essentially The Thing, really, you know, it's like a remake of The Thing, and The Thing is a recognisable story for a lot of people. But also because it's got that mood and paranoia that the X-Files has throughout, you know, sort of distilled into this one story.
That's right. And again, reaffirming what I said earlier about you don't need to know about previous episodes to get the backstory, etc. It's just a standalone episode that you can just watch every Friday, Saturday night and enjoy immensely.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I think as well it would be one of those episodes where, you know, because season one, it's a bit hit and miss, isn't it, really, in terms of quality?
I think the problem is with some of these favourite type episodes is that when you do get round to reviewing them or dissecting them, there's very little that you can say because, you know, you love it to death, don't you? And you can't already say what lots of other people have already said before, really. But yeah, I think, like you said, it is hit and miss, season one, definitely. Yeah.
But you've got an Ice or a Squeeze, which,
yep,
are,
and a Space.
Well, yeah. Come on, next you'll be saying that Fire is like tantamount to Genius.
Well, you say that, but I used to like that episode very much. But yeah.
Well,
upon repeated viewings, it gets a bit tiresome. And, yeah, I get your meaning, though. I do get your meaning.
But yeah, I think it's because Ice and Squeeze are easily episodes that across the 11 seasons you could put up there in a potential top 25 maybe of the whole show.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So they are really, really good choices to introduce people to what this is. This is good. You'd be like, don't worry about the next one. Right? Forget that. Just watch it, because there are episodes as good as Ice, I promise.
Yeah, how can such an iconic type episode be followed by Space? It's just, oh God, mind boggles.
Because you're
they
because
were really, Chris, really busy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Chris Carter just couldn't sustain the levels of like producing brilliance, you know, that he would have Glenn Morgan and James Wong do one week and then he does Space. Oh my God. Boggles the mind, but yeah. Okay, Jessica, what's your first newbie choice then?
Well, I'm in season one as well. I've watched season one about 10 times more than I've watched anything else. But I think, like Eleanor and Simon said, that if you're going to start, you do have to watch something from the beginning, or you're going to be, the later things just don't carry as much weight if you haven't seen some of the earlier stuff. And I went for Beyond the Sea because it's just so well done. Like, I love the way that it's really gritty and it's, you know, your narrative sort of procedural, but then it's also really got a lot of depth in terms of character and the way there's a serial killer, but you don't hate him. You almost feel a bit sorry for him towards the end, and you've got Scully's struggle with belief and the consequences of her changing her belief system. I really like the way the show goes into that sort of thing. You know, we often think Scully's a bit pig-headed and sceptical, but as she says, she's afraid to believe, because if she believes that she's seen a ghost, then that changes her entire worldview, and she'd have to question a whole lot of her other beliefs, and that's scary, and I like the way that they address that. So
yeah.
I think it's relatable, I think it's clever, and it's scary, so that's a pretty good mix.
Great choice.
And also Brad Dourif's in it, and everybody knows him now, so that's only got to help your cause if you're trying to tell someone, look, this is really good.
Yeah, he's one of those actors who's just, like, ridiculously good in almost everything. Even when he does trash, you know, he's always good in whatever he does. But, yeah, I think this is a really, really great choice. It's a different kind of choice in the sense that it doesn't necessarily play to the procedural aspects that Squeeze is so good at and Ice's sort of contained paranoia. But this is much more about the essence of faith and belief and Scully's own personal journey, and also the idea of Mulder's scepticism about religion, because that's the first time you kind of get this in this episode, and it's something that creeps in then across the series. It's the only thing, you know, the irony that the only thing Mulder doesn't believe in is God. I mean, it's still hilarious to me, but it's great. It's a really, really good beat to play. And it shows that this show can be a little bit different as well. It's another example of how it's not necessarily just going to be the same thing week after week. So I think it's more of a challenging choice for a first intro episode. But I think if you get behind Beyond the Sea, then I think there's so many doors open up to you for the X-Files, don't they?
Yeah, I think it's really good at showing how nuanced the show is. It's not going to go down the easy black and white route. It's going to try and explore things in a slightly different way, just be a bit more nuanced about it, and I think that can attract some people.
I was just going to say that I really like how creepy it is too, and one of my later selections is because of that element too, but just the scene that stands out to me from Beyond the Sea is when Scully's in her hotel room and she's got the chair in front of her and she's trying to, I don't know if she's imagining or summoning or whatever, but you see that clip of her dad, and when you know Scully, you know how uncharacteristic that is, but it's just, she's so vulnerable and it's so creepy.
And we all know Brad Dourif has gone on to greater things and stuff since then, but yeah, he had a very memorable performance in it. I do remember, you know, all them scenes when she went to visit him in the prison, and you know, he was more or less sort of playing around with her feelings and stuff. It was very sinister type stuff, but yeah, very well done. I do like that episode. Yeah,
it is spooky. It is a spooky one in a different way. You're absolutely right in terms of Eleanor, in terms of as well as you know, in what she sees. I mean, the whole sequence where William Scully's sitting in the chair and he's just open mouthing, you know, it's chilling. It's really chilling. It's haunting. It's like something out of an old ghost story. And it's very, very well done. And the other thing with this as well is that it almost feels, I mean, everyone talks about how Irresistible was very much the template for Millennium, but I think you could argue that Beyond the Sea is a little bit of that DNA as well.
Yeah.
There's something else, true. You know, in that it's playing a little bit more into that dark, murderous, serial killer element with a bit of paranormal stuff in there. And it's, you know, that too is another addition that the rest of season one doesn't quite do in the same way.
Am I right in thinking as well that is her father's first appearance on it? It is, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
just a brilliant choice, Beyond the Sea. Absolutely love it. And I'm gonna mix it up for my first choice, and I'm gonna go where everyone knows I'm gonna go, where I have been before many times, because I'm nothing if not dull and predictable. Yes, I'm going for Pusher. Now the reason I'm going for Pusher is A, because Pusher is the best episode of the X-Files. Fact. Everybody, there's no debate in this, so I don't want any debates, please. Right, it is the best episode. But also because I think, and Pusher obviously season 3, I think at this point, The series is obviously well established. It's had the Anasazi trilogy. You know, it's becoming a phenomenon really in the public eye. But I think that the thing with Pusher is that it distills the Mulder and Scully relationship within their paradigm in relation to a very, very sort of traditional sort of Sherlock Holmesian bad guy in Pusher, in Patrick Modell. And I think the show hadn't really done this. It had sort of leaned toward it with someone like John Barnett in Young at Heart, maybe. But all the other villains in the show are much more sort of nefarious, mysterious characters like the Smoking Man and, you know, Krycek and all these guys.
It's just done better in Pusher as opposed to in Young at Heart.
Yeah, exactly. Because Young at Heart's a bit of a weird, all over the place, forgettable episode, really. But Pusher really sort of takes this idea, you know, and I know we talked about it when I talked about it with Darren on the show and everything like this. We talked about how a lot of it comes from very much from comic books, and it's something that Vince Gilligan then took on to Breaking Bad, because Breaking Bad is a very similar idea, really, to both Pusher and Drive. It's sort of Pusher and Drive jammed together. You know, that whole show, really. And he's always been interested in this idea of telling almost a comic book origin story of a villain, you know, in this sort of framework. But so it's mashing that up with a bit of Sherlock Holmes, because he's very Moriarty. And I just think it's quite accessible in the sense that people understand these kinds of stories, and giving Mulder a nemesis, you know, in the traditional way, somebody who he can have this repartee with and who's like, ah, you know, Mulder, ha ha ha, twirl the mustache. I just think it might be a nice entry point for people to come in. And then they'll also see the Mulder and Scully relationship, because there's some great back and forth. The amazing Russian roulette sequence at the end, yeah, where it's all about the two of them and the choice they have to make. And just some really wonderfully, brilliantly staged, creepy moments, like where Pusher talks Frank Burst to death down the phone. Just loads of stuff.
Yeah, you know, very good.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that could not work, possibly could not work, but it does work. Because the people performing it just do it really, really, really well. So it's a good example of that too.
That's it. I think it is. I think it is the performances, isn't it? Because is it corny on the script, do you think? Is it the performances that make it? Is it people like Robert Wisden as well who makes this one particularly good?
I think he's brilliant in it.
Yeah, I don't think it's a corny script. I'm just thinking of something like the Russian roulette scene, for example. That wouldn't work if you had melodramatic or flat acting.
Yeah, that's right.
But everyone's right on point, and so it's really quite powerful, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's an interesting question, Tony, because actually, if you don't have people as good as David Duchovny in particular, I'm thinking of here, you know, when he says made you look, and when they're on having that midnight chat in the phone box, it could, those elements I think could be quite corny or quite unoriginal, but because you've got the maturity of the actors, they really work their magic.
I think that's a nice way of putting it, the maturity of the actors. I think that's right. And by this point as well, they've grown into the characters even more, haven't they, than some of these season one examples that are brilliant examples, don't get me wrong. And you know, I feel like I haven't gone for a season one episode, but I can totally understand why that's a good entry point for all the obvious reasons, because it's a starting point. But I think by season three, they're even more comfortable, aren't they, and assured playing these characters. So you really see that in an episode like Pusher.
It's just a shame, I think, that the sequel to this isn't as good as the original. But then again, sequels never tend to be, do they? But in my opinion, anyway, I don't know what your guys' opinions are.
It's not.
I think it knows it's not, though.
But no. I think you're right. It does. Yeah.
I mean, it's not bad, but it's not good either.
It feels a lot more pulpy. It feels a lot more self-aware. So I agree with you, Jessica. Like, it knows it's not going to reach Pusher heights, so it just has fun with it. And I think the scene where the hospital employee, I don't know if she's like a doctor or a nurse or whatever, where she puts her hand on the electrics, that's still really shocking. That's one of the things that stands out for me from the series.
Yeah.
You made a great pun there without realising as well. Nicely done. You've definitely been listening
all
to the
intentional.
Yeah. But yeah, you're absolutely right. There's lots of moments that are very memorable in Pusher. But then, you know, it is a 10 out of 10 perfect, you know, best episode of The X-Files ever. You know, that's what.
So better deliver.
You know, what would be really interesting would be to correlate people's first choice with the season they started watching. When did you start watching, Tony? I don't remember. Was it season three?
It was season two, actually.
Okay. All right. Well, there goes my theory.
No, mine was season three, Jessica.
Mine was season one.
Yeah, mine was season one too. So
My first episode was Deep Throat.
Nice.
I watched the original run when it was on Sky One in the UK. So.
Right. Well, I was just going to say this because actually, yes, while I first watched like One Breath in season two, I actually don't think it was when it was originally on air. I think I remember watching the Sky One episodes in the UK, and that was season three, to be fair. So I think you're kind of right, really, in a way.
Yeah, we get even attached to what we saw first.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, that's right.
And I really love, and I really vividly remember watching particularly seasons three and four, you know, when they were on Sky. I don't know why beyond that, but yeah. So it's a good theory. Eleanor's the outlier there, though, I think.
Yeah, but I've got two choices to come still.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's true. 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 Well, that's a good segue. Let's move on and talk about your second choice, Eleanor. What have you gone for?
I've gone for Anasazi, which is season two finale. And again, the reasons for this are, this was actually the first episode that I ever saw. So for me, it was the gateway into the show. When I was looking at it, or watching it this week, I felt like the storytelling is most closely linked to what we expect from shows now, in that it doesn't reveal anything and you're left scrambling to try and pick up clues and connecting it with this overall vibe of the whole episode, which also tells you a lot. I think that it might not be so accessible because Mulder is very off character, because obviously his water is being drugged and everything. But I feel like it sets the stakes so high from the get-go. And it also introduces all the major players like CSM, Bill Mulder, Gunman, Skinner, Krycek. They're all there. We only need Maggie Scully, and she comes in the following episode. So it kind of sets up that whole world. And I feel like you've got to have a myth arc episode if you're wanting to introduce the show to someone. And this is such a tight, beautifully shot episode. And it gives Scully a lot to do. And she is my favorite character. So I like the episodes where she gets to really shine.
What a first episode to watch. I mean, wow.
Yeah, I was on a ski trip and we were going to Italy and we were in this big bus and they had the unopened file VHS and they stuck it on.
Yes.
And we just watched the whole thing. And then at the end, I was like, I don't want to go skiing. I want to watch the X-Files.
I watched that tape to death. I really did.
I think that should be on a T-shirt, actually. Like, I don't want to go skiing. I want to watch the X-Files. And people should wear that in like Austria. Things like that.
I like it.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, when we eventually get the X-Cast like store going, right, with T-shirts, we'll have to remember that one and do it. but that's really good. I mean, the unopened file was a real staple of my childhood. So it was an amazing like three episode video.
Yeah, me
with
too.
The trilogy.
Yeah, me too.
Those episodes are just they are. I mean, people have said, haven't they, that it's basically the Star Wars trilogy of the X-Files. You know, it takes the show to a completely different level after those first two seasons. I've had some brilliant episodes, don't get me wrong, but this just, it rockets it into the stratosphere, you know, with those episodes. And Anasazi, I would say Anasazi is probably the best of the three, I think, really. And it's just got so much. It's a blockbuster, you know, and what's the best way to introduce, you know, people to something? A blockbuster. And they'll say, this is part of the apex of the show. You know, it doesn't get a lot better than this. So this is a great way of coming in and saying, you know, this, if you love this, you're going to dig so much of this show, you know?
It's interesting as well that although it's Eleanor's choice, it's my favourite episode of the whole show, but it's not one of my choices for today's discussion, unfortunately. You know, for the opposite reasons that Eleanor discussed, I think because of the mythology at the time, it just requires a knowledge of it, I think. But that's just my own opinion, really. It's, you know, it's neither here nor there.
I found when I was thinking of the episodes for this podcast, I really wanted to recommend or bring some to the table. But then I also felt like in order to, this is going to sound very exclusive, but in order to understand how good they actually are, it can't be your first episode. You can't watch some of the gems unless you fully understand the show, because you won't get the nuance as well. So I see your point, Simon, and I kind of debated whether or not to include this, and then in the end, yeah, I just watched it again and thought, well, I can't not, because it is amazing.
Yeah, I wanted to put it on my list too, and yeah. I didn't have to think about it because you'd already done it, but yeah, I definitely had the consideration of you can't just pick your favourites, because your favourites are sort of sustained by the investment you've already made.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, some of the season 5, season 8 things, they just wouldn't make sense, even though they're brilliant. So
I think we can all agree, though, that all three of our choices are fantastic, let's be honest.
Yeah, definitely. So we're not picking our favourites.
Absolutely.
Well, I did, didn't I? I'm terrible. I picked my favourite straight away. I'm the worst person in the world.
No, no, no. Like, it doesn't mean that what's your favourite and what is accessible doesn't overlap. So yours just overlaps.
True. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a fantastic choice.
And to be fair, I think Anasazi is a great choice as well. And I completely agree with those reasons, but I think it's very difficult to be able to pick what mythology episode do you pick in a way. If you're gonna get because the X-Files, obviously, yes, we've talked about how great the Monster of the Week episodes are and these solo episodes and all this kind of thing when you watch with distance, but the mythology is such a key part of this show and to enjoying this show. And you know, it was funny, I was listening to the most recent, shameless plug here everyone, but the most recent episode of The Time Is Now, our Millennium show, which was talking about the finale, the series finale. And Chris Knowles was saying, talking about how he wished that the two things had met more, the mythology and the Monster of the Week episodes, because they almost feel like two completely different series running in parallel, you know, throughout the X-Files. And he's right in many ways. I don't know if I would want to have seen them come together more than they did. I like the fact they're on two tracks, but he's right about the two tracks, I think. And you know, it's important, I think, for people to get a view of both of those tracks. But where do you start with the mythology? It would be hard to start with something as dour and dark as Dwayne Barry, say.
Yeah, yeah.
I nearly put that on my list.
Yeah,
well, fair enough, right?
And there's dark and pessimistic, so...
I'm sure you're lovely. Don't worry about it.
No, and I'd love to hear that argument, to be fair. And I'm saying that just from my opinion, but it's hard to know what to pick. The pilot doesn't really give you a good taster of it, you know. Yeah. So what do you go with? But at least Anasazi has that starting point of big global conspiracy, all these nefarious people, a plot you understand about the tape, you know, and all. So yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's a fairly well-contained plot around the tape. You don't need to know everything else going on around it. So
I think maybe that's why it's such a good trilogy as well, because as I'm going to repeat what we've all just said now, but because with the tape, you know, the saga of the tape has a beginning, a middle and the end, and we see the journey that all the characters go through, and that whilst there are loose ends, there aren't as many as, you know, you'd get from the myth arc episodes of seasons, you know, the rest of season 3, 4 and 5. It asks some questions and then answers them fairly satisfactorily in that three-parter, I would say.
I think I'd just tell new people to skip all the stuff where Mulder has, you know, visions of buffaloes in the Native American thing or whatever, you know. Just be like, forget all that. Forget that. He's okay. Skip to paperclip, basically. Because we all know the Blessing Way is rubbish. Do you remember the episode with me and Darren where we went, oh, God, we've got to do the Blessing Way before we did paperclip?
I mean, going back to what you said earlier and watching the unopened file, it's, you know, their memories are just fantastic. I must have worn that tape out twice over. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and do you know what, right? The Blessing Way isn't rubbish. It's not rubbish. There's some elements that are a bit, oh. But yeah, it's still, I would happily give anyone the you know, the unopened file. Well, actually, I wouldn't, because nobody has a video anymore, would they? So that would be really cool of me. We're like, have this VHS.
It is quite strange that they haven't actually re-released that in a DVD or a Blu-ray format.
I think X-Files fans would lap that up, actually.
Yeah, it'd be excellent.
Yeah.
I'd certainly lap it up.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Well, let's talk about your second choice then. So, what have you gone for your noob X-File?
This one's from season 2, which is the favourite season.
Yeah.
And it's a really good one. It's Irresistible.
Oh, yeah. Nice. You're really going for, you know, people really, go the big... Let's watch the grimmest episode of the X-File. Yeah.
And it's going back to what you said earlier about it sort of linking into the type of stories that Millennium tells. He's such a creepy son of a bitch. He really is. old Donnie Faster.
Yeah, man, he's so mundane, but so creepy.
He is. Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what they were saying about the old devil in a button-down shirt. It's just, oh, he's so creepy. But my main reason for picking it is because of Scully's acting skills in it. Again, reiterating what I said earlier about it not being a mythology type episode, but no, an otherwise sort of stoic and unperturbed professional manner that she's got, we just see her crumble in front of our eyes over 45 minutes, and to see her act like that, and especially the ending scene with her breaking down in Mulder's arms, it's great stuff. It's top-notch stuff.
What is it about this, do you think, then, would appeal to a newbie in the sense of getting a flavour for what this show is?
It does come under the... I wouldn't say it's a Monster of the Week type story, even though we see sort of visions of him being a Satan figure, so per se.
Mm, mm.
But I think it's a bit different to, you know, your normal Monster of the Week type extraterrestrial, you know. It's very difficult to explain, isn't it? It is going down the, like, CSI type route, if you want to put it that way. It's, you know, it's different in that regard, but it's just top-notch telly. It really is. I can't really explain it any other better than that.
I think it's good. It's a good choice in the sense that it's not something that would necessarily contain lots of the traditional Mulder and Scully interactions in the same way, but I think it really does. It contains the kind of, like you say, not quite monster in the sense of like a Tombs or whatever, because he's a bit different. It contains that sort of parallel, almost kind of mythology that I suppose Millennium does more with, which is the idea of a satanic, religious, demonic force existing in this world, you know, that's separate from aliens and separate from monsters. And that's interesting because, you know, they really go for it much more in Horizon in season 7, which is not as good an episode. But this does suggest that he's a demon, basically, at one point.
Yeah.
But it leaves it a bit ambiguous. But I think that's an interesting entry point for the show.
I also sort of love the old way they used to tell these types of stories with the, you know, the narration over the images. And, you know, whilst Scully's typing up a report to submit to, you know, the general higher powers to either get said person prosecuted or just to generally ignore it. Really, but yeah. So they never sort of continued doing that, didn't they, in sort of later seasons? They kind of stopped doing that type of storytelling, really.
Yeah. You only had the odd episode that did it, I think, you know, later on. Yeah. That actually did. It was nice.
It was mainly in the first, I think it was one, season one and season two, and then they started to drop it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that type of storytelling. I thought it was quite good.
Maybe it's because it's a bit more like anthology in the sense, you know, in that it could be just a kind of standalone, completely standalone show where, you know, you've got the report and everything. I think the Winx, mm-hmm. I suppose the Anasazi trilogy is the crossing point for this, because that's the point it becomes much more of a personal show in many ways,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So maybe before then they did more of that because it was a little bit more two agents investigating, type up the case files, boom, you're out of there, you know?
It's also one of Chris Carter's better stories as well, because as we know, some of his stories are pretty hit and miss. But
really?
Chris Carter, yeah, some of his stories are pretty
hit and miss. Come on, you've watched Space? That is like the apex of... You've watched Fight Club? Come on, these are amazing episodes.
And we've still got Fight Club to come, haven't we?
But oh, hey, God, yeah. If anyone's picked Fight Club... then I'm stopping this recording right now.
But, yeah, I mean, all joking aside, it's you know, some of his stories are pretty hit and miss, let's be honest. But this is one he knocked out of the park, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Jessica, then, what would your second choice be?
Well, I had to include a mythology because as much as it's maligned these days, that's what drew me in, and I think it's what drew a lot of people in. Because in the same way other shows were not doing all this gritty, gruesome procedural stuff, even though it's standard now, there weren't any other shows sort of addressing these big mythological type questions like, you know, does the government really have our best interests at heart? Are there things going on that we don't know about? So I've picked Colony and Endgame.
I love those
yeah,
episodes.
See, I like One Breath more, but as we were talking about before, that's a bit hard to really be invested in if you haven't seen what's happened up until that point, whereas I feel Colony and Endgame really lay out a lot of the mythology without you needing, I mean, and even at the beginning when the Mulder voiceover, it tells you about how his sister was lost and that's what's driven him, et cetera, et cetera. So it asks all these interesting big questions about, you know, what is really going on? Is there some grand conspiracy? And then it makes it even more fascinating by sort of melding it with aliens, and, you know, people are fascinated by space, and so aliens are really out there, but, you know, government conspiracy is a bit close to home, so it makes it relatable but also, I guess, out there and scary, and it's a really good combination. That was my reason for choosing it. And I think also the whole colonization by alien virus is probably going to have a more visceral effect on people than perhaps it would have in the past, given the last year. And I just think, you know, sometimes the X-Files was just really prescient in the way it, how the world could become unhinged, the ways it talks about it has come to pass, even down to, there's not so much unhinged, but the way that the military, the people on the boat observe the crash. I mean, it's very reminiscent of the footage that's been released recently by the US military about the unidentified flying object. So it just feels really grounded even now.
I've forgotten about that. They've come out and basically said, yeah, we don't really know what that is. Haven't they really? They've kind of admitted that they don't actually know what some of this UFO stuff is. And everyone's
yeah,
a bit like,
and no one cares.
Yeah, because no one's bothered. Everyone's like, we're in the middle of a pandemic, guys. Come on. It's like, oh, God, who cares? You know, I put on a comment thread, I think it was a Guardian thing, in that, you know, people were anxious and going, oh, my God. And I was like, look, in the X-Files, in the latest X-Files, I wrote this. And I said, in the latest X-Files episode season, even the aliens can't be asked to invade us anymore because we're terrible and we're destroying our own planet. So don't worry, right? It's fine. That's genuinely what I love the most about that season, right? In that Chris Carter basically said, you know what? They wouldn't care anymore. They actually wouldn't be bothered with us. I think that's brilliant. But and on the basis of what you've said, Jessica, there, I think in a way, Maestro Rule 2 might be a good entry point because that essentially predicts the COVID-19 pandemic in many ways, in a spooky way. But no, I think Colony and Endgame's brilliant. I think that's a great choice because it is quite scary. I mean, I always remember being chilled at various points. This is the scariest the alien bounty hunter is easily than any other episode. He is terrifying. He's like this mixture of the Terminator and, you know, just some completely unknowable being. Stuff like when he opens the boot up and the agent's dead in there, or particularly the cliffhanger of Colony, where you get the Scully on the phone and she realizes it's not Mulder. That's giving me a chill now as I talk about it. It really makes the whole feel of Colony and Endgame truly, truly alien in a way that I don't know the X-Files has been able to get to in the same way a lot of the time.
I love the way that, you know, it's really weird and out there, like I said, like a shape-shifting face. But then by the same token, if that was really happening, then how could you prove that it wasn't happening because the person would just shift? You know what I mean? It almost reminds me of Folie à Deux. It's so mad that no one would believe it, so therefore it could easily be happening. Not that I'm conspiracy minded, but I just think that's clever. it's out there in just the right way.
It's another video that I watched to death, you know, the one that they released as a double video. Yeah, I remember that well, very well.
I like how it all kicks off by just that small advert in the paper, if I'm remembering correctly. And I think that that's, if there is something going on, it's going to be, you know, through small things like this. It's going to hide in plain sight. But the fact that they were able to pick it up and start pulling on that thread. And I also really like how these episodes focus on, you know, cloning and doctors and science and evil. It's a real primitive kind of classic horror trope that they've picked up and done so well. I like those bits of those elements too.
I think you're so right there in that it's the whole idea of it being in the newspaper. It is exactly the whole thing. That's where Mulder, and that's one of the reasons that, like, I've been watching season 8 recently again, and there's the whole thing about how they find it so difficult investigating X-Files cases because Scully just isn't minded in the same way. Doggett is going, what the hell is all this, basically, because he comes from a different place. Whereas Mulder, the episode Badler, where Scully just cannot do this. She's trying to do what Mulder does. And it comes so easy to him because he's so used to looking in newspapers or looking at scraps of information or looking at, you know, random little message boards or whatever to see something and go, oh, that's probably going to be a city mystic or that's going to be an alien spacecraft or whatever. Whereas normal people can't think like that. And that's the beauty of this show. I think that's a great example of how, as a newbie coming into Colony, you'd be able to see just how quirky the X-Files approach is. What is a procedural structure, really? Two agents investigating crimes, investigating deaths, but it's just not from a normal prism. And I think that's a great example of when you come into it, the kind of show that you're going to get, which brews up all of these different things.
Yeah, with later seasons, the type of storytelling is, you know, it gradually changes, doesn't it? Because we're getting so used to the characters and all their traits and the backgrounds, etc. Which is, I mean, I'm primarily a fan of series 1 to 5, really. I mean, not that I don't watch 6 to 11, but I do. I mean, I absolutely adore from 1 to 5. I watch them to death, so...
What, you mean but, yeah. You're not a shipper, Si, you mean?
Oh, God, no. God, no.
You can't admit that on this show. No, you can't.
There's nothing wrong with that. I fully understand why people like that type of relationship. I actually love their relationship the way it is. You know,
yeah.
Up until the point, you know, where series 8 it all goes. Oh no, let's not go there.
That's another chat. We'll have another chat about that sometime, definitely.
Yeah.
But no, I love that choice. I think it's a really, really great choice. Colony and Endgame, brilliant stuff. So, yeah, my second choice then, I've gone for something that's probably like a bit of a softy sort of X-Files noir. I've gone for Detour in season 5 because I think Detour is a good combination of the classic sort of Monster in the Week story with very much the Mulder and Scully kind of relationship and the relaxed nature of their relationship that I think a lot of people appreciate in this show. And you know, I joke about not being a shipper. Sorry, I actually think I'm becoming more of a shipper lately.
Oh,
I've written pieces on like season 6 and 7, and I'm going to write one about season 8 and 9 about the Mulder and Scully romance. And I actually think there is a lot more nuance and skill in what they did with that in those later seasons than I'd ever considered before. So I'm actually a bit more of a fan of it now, and I think
Sarah Blair will have a field day with this, won't she?
The only way she'd be happier is if I said that I was going to marry Assistant Director Skinner. You know, that's the only way she'd be happier than this. Actually, she wouldn't. She'd be angry with me. She'd be like, "Back off." But I'll just marry Steve Skinner instead. It's fine. But like we've did Arcadia recently, me, Sarah and Carl, obviously, and we're talking about the shipper stuff, and it sort of set me on this journey of trying to look at the shipper stuff again. And I think Detour sort of combines some of that, where they're heading with all this. You know, you've got the whole sequence of, you know, Mulder and Scully on the rock, you know, having the conversation, thinking Jeremiah was a bullfrog and all this. And I think it nicely brews that together with a really good monster story, you know. And also, this is I probably should have put Arcadia on my list in a way, because this and Detour were the two episodes that I tested on my wife, who is, and I've probably talked about this on the podcast before, who is reluctantly refusing, very stubbornly, to watch The X-Files with me properly. And we did season one, and she's like, oh, it's too dated, it's too old.
I think you should do Borsa.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, she didn't enjoy it as much, right? Which is fair enough, right? Because I think she loves TV and she loves movies. She's very knowledgeable, but I think she couldn't get into it. So I said, let's try and watch Detour. So, and she really got into Detour. She really liked it. And I think it is because there is an accessibility about the, you know, the approach in what it does, in that it is a bit frothy, it is a bit fun, but it is also a bit scary, it is also a bit weird. There are some really good sequences, like the eyes under the bed. You know, I think the way that the last scene is done, where you're fully expecting Scully to be attacked in that room, and it doesn't do it. You know, it doesn't do it. It leaves you hanging with the possibility that it might have happened. I think he's really clever, and I think it's the kind of X-File that sort of jams together different styles at the peak of its game, really. Early season five, in a way. I think season five is, I think, probably the best season overall for me in terms of quality, by and large. And I think it does it really well.
I think it's a great choice because, you know, it just shows the range. We've talked about a lot of the grimmer, grittier episodes, but the fact is the X-Files did a lot of things very well, including comedy. And so this one's not, you know, a broad comedy, but it's definitely lighter and funnier, and it's still entertaining and still has scary moments. And so, yeah, held together with the other ones, it just demonstrates the range. And I think that's good. Because it's outside, perhaps that's why it doesn't seem to have dated as much as well, as long as you don't look at the clothes, because there's no technology to speak of.
Or I think what Sarah said on the episode we did, where she said there's no way that Scully would be wearing that coat in the Florida Everglades.
Yeah. I can't watch that episode without thinking of that now.
Me too. I know, she's ruined it for me now completely, because it is absolutely the case. Eleanor, then, let's go to our final choices then. What would your third and final newbie X-File be?
So I have gone for DPO, and this was the first episode that sprang to mind when you invited me to do this. And I really thought, do I really want to include it? Because I know it's not on anybody's kind of top lists or anything. And I think some of it goes back to what Jessica said earlier on, where for me, season three was the one that I watched on TV and the one that got me completely hooked, to the point here I am, you know, X amount of years later doing a podcast. And I just don't think you can, in my opinion, I don't think you can beat season three. I think the Myth Arc episodes are very, very good. And I think the Monsters of the Week episodes are very, very good. And DPO kicks off after the opener. As a side note, I had really tried to expand. I wanted to include a different one, and I know I've got two episodes that are placed closely together, but that's just the way it has to be. I'm sorry.
The rule allows for it. It's fine. You're all good.
Thank you. But I think it's, again, a really creepy episode, and I think it showcases how the X-Files can tell interesting stories, because the choice of this lightning boy, this person, human, who can conduct lightning, and then to give that power to a disenfranchised, you know, unsupported teen makes for a really good story. And it's classic 90s. It's got a lot of grunge. It's got two famous guest stars, which again goes back to a point Jessica said, where, you know, if you want people to buy into it, give them something that they already recognize in terms of guest stars. So the vibe fits the time of the show, but also Darren Oswald is scary. He's unpredictable. He's not amazingly intelligent. He doesn't really have a lot of emotional maturity. He's no one knows what he's going to do. And there was one scene where he's walking across a field and he's drinking a beer, and Mulder and Scully come up to him and nothing happens, but it's very tense. And with the final climax in the hospital, there's a scene where the elevator's dinging and you expect it to be Darren Oswald, but it's not. It's the body of Zero. And the standoff with Scully and Mrs. Cavett and Darren Oswald, it takes tropes that we recognise and tells them in a different way. And I think with a very 2021 lens on this 95 episode, I think today Darren Oswald, we'd recognise him as an incel. You know, he's frustrated, he can't manipulate things the way that he wants, no one knows what he's going to do. It's a threat that has stood the test of time, So it's, yeah, it's 90s vibe, 2021 threat, and I'm here for it.
that is a brilliant reading on that. I've not come across that before. I think that's fab. I think that's really good. I think that's absolutely what he is. I think he's, you know, I think the thing with this is it's a really solid episode. And I always feel sorry for DPO because it follows Paperclip, you know, yeah. It follows Paperclip. How can you follow
Paperclip? It's in season three, you know? Like it's got a lot to compete with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right, exactly. And it's between this and it's between Paperclip and Clive Brookman. You know, the poor episode.
Who was it that wrote that episode? I always forget.
Oh, I think it was Howard Gordon.
I think it was Howard Gordon, right. Yeah.
And Howard Gordon's, you know, he's not necessarily the most, you know, legendary X-Files writer in the sense, I think, but he's always solid. You know, he always delivers solid goods, I think, in a lot of his episodes. And I think this is one of them in that it's a very clear, understandable Mulder and Scully investigation that, you're absolutely right, Erna, has some real resonances in the modern day now when you look at it from this perspective. And it's a choice I don't think a lot of people would have thought of. So I think that's great. I think it's really good. And I definitely think people would watch this and go, yeah, do you know what? I'm going to watch another one. I think that was, yeah, that was good.
Yeah,
that was
good. And it's got an autopsy scene, which is classic X-Files.
Yeah. You've got to have an autopsy. You've got to have Scully reluctantly doing, another autopsy, Mulder. Again. Simon, what about yours then? What's your number three?
My third choice is from season four, and it's Paper Hearts, which is probably on a lot of people's favourite episodes of the show, completely, really. But
sensing a bit of a theme here with you in terms of episodes about quite, like, you know, dark male, you know, killers essentially, and that kind of stuff. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. But yeah,
again, it's
here.
I mean, again, it's because it's it's not like a typical Monster of the Week type story. My main reason, though, is because Mulder is absolutely fantastic in it. He's my favourite character. But again, the character of John Lee Roach, played by Tom Noonan, I think he's absolutely fabulous as well. He comes across as a really sick creep. Like you said, sounds as though I'm going on a tangent here with all these sadistic creeps, but he never seems to flinch even when Mulder's sort of interrogating him throughout it all. And their two scenes together where he's interrogating him are just they're just gold, absolute gold. But no, I mean, you get the sense here that Mulder's going through a really bad time in this episode. And the viewer is sort of really feeling his pain and his suffering. And again, it's going back to his personal sort of experience with his sister, which to a newbie, obviously, wouldn't know that. But I think it's probably a good jumping on point to get them to go back and start watching back episodes of the show, I think. But yeah, I think the story's kind of straightforward again. He's having dreams and he's going back to a tried and tested formulas, if you like, but it's one of the best episodes in the entire show. Yeah, very good. It's got shades of Conduit in places as well, where Scully's saying to Mulder, you know, stop chasing your sister. Not that she actually says it in this episode, but it's kind of along them same kinds of lines, because it is, you know, the plot's kind of along them kinds of lines, isn't it, really? I think,
yeah, I think you could triple bill this Conduit, this and Closure. I think would make a really interesting triple bill, actually, in terms of the Samantha storyline and Mulder's, you know, struggle with that and everything like that. And what I think I like about this choice is that it fuses together a little bit of the sort of standalone monstery kind of story with the mythology in a way. You know, yeah. Because obviously the Samantha stuff, but it also fuses
it's got elements.
With,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you know, without obviously going into all that stuff necessarily, but Samantha, and I think that's one of the reasons I like Closure in the end, because it has the Samantha explanation not be mythology in a way, you know, and I think that tracks in a way with episodes like Paperclip, which was the first time they sort of went, well, you know what, maybe it's not aliens, maybe aliens didn't do this. You know, maybe it was just a horrible child killing murderer.
I love the bus scene as well, when he goes in onto the bus and Roach has got the, yeah, it's the standoff there is incredible. And of course the end scene as well, where they're back at the X-Files office and Scully says, would you like to, why don't you go home and get some sleep? And he just gives her a chuckle, and which kind of says it all about their relationship, doesn't it, really? It's brilliant. Absolute top notch.
It's almost like a dark version of Pusher with John Lee Roche, you know, pitted against Mulder as opposed to Robert Patrick Modell. It's not one I watch very often. I know it's good, but it's too close to home. With daughters, I can't watch it.
I love that Pusher comparison, Jessica. That's really good. I'd never thought of that before, but I think you're absolutely right there. That's a fascinating way of looking at this. Another sort of nemesis for Mulder, but much less theatrical and much less comic booky in a different way, you know, much more on a personal, you know, profane level. Yeah, it's really interesting that.
I feel like it's an episode that also shows what the X-Files could have been without Scully, because Mulder is so empathetic and emotional, and I feel like here John Lee Roche obviously plays into that and takes advantage of that, and I think you would have had that a lot more if Scully hadn't been there to impress her scientific rigor on everything and really make him assess things more objectively. And she does it here too, and obviously this is from an emotional point as opposed to just being a standard X-File, but I feel like if she hadn't have been there, he wouldn't have lasted in that department as long, because he would have imploded somehow.
And that was set up as early as EBE as well. That's when she said, you'll just believe anything because you're so willing to, and people are going to use that against you.
Roach knew how to get under Mulder's skin. There's not a lot of people that can do that, as we already know, but
Yeah, he did. He could do that in a big way. I think another example of that whole thing you're saying there, Anna, is Three, where Scully's not there, and he's just descends into this pit of sex and grime and vampires and just loses
despair.
All perspective, and he's without Scully he would have been dead by middle of season two easily.
I mean, even like, demons wouldn't... as well, like if she's he's faced with losing her and look at what he chooses to do.
He's a mess with that. I do like that. I like the fact they really go into that. Whenever she's not there, they're like, Mulder's just, he's just a mess. He's a complete mess of a human being. It's great. But I love that. Great choice again. Really good choice, Paper Hearts. All right then, Jessica, what's your third and final choice then?
My third and final choice is a very well-known one, but it's well-known for a good reason. I think I've picked Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, which is universally loved. I don't love it as I think a lot of people do, but I can appreciate it. I think the reason I don't love it as much as other people might is because a lot of the things it discusses and delves into are things that I really thought about a lot before, so perhaps it's not as novel, but just, I mean, what other show on TV would delve into predestination and free will at the same time being funny? It's a pretty big achievement, and I just think it does it really well. And you know, there's so many great lines, so many great ideas. You know, if the future already exists, why bother doing anything? And Bruckman says, well, now you're catching on. And, you know, if everything is predestined, then what's the point of doing anything? But if we're completely free, then that's a bit of a burden as well, because you're worried about everything you do. And the line is sort of somewhere in the middle, that the choices you make do affect things, but there's certain things that are more likely to happen. So even though Clyde Bruckman can see how people are going to die, you know, sometimes he's wrong. Mulder didn't get his throat slit, and he can't see everything about the future. And it's just brilliantly done, as many people have said more articulately before. So I think if you really wanted to show how clever the show could be, then this would be a good point to start.
Yeah. What I love about this choice as well is that you're representing the comedy episodes. You know, and that's something that we haven't yet done, and I think is an important thing, actually.
Yeah, that was deliberate. I had to pick something grimy, something mythology, and something funny. This one's kind of grimy and funny.
Yeah, it is. It's probably the darkest comedy that Darren Morgan did, really, in many ways. Even going into season 11 when he came back, season 10 and 11, I think Clyde Brookman is the most existentially sort of, you know, I mean, he basically suggests that Mulder's going to die from masturbation, you know. So
what a way to go.
And Scully doesn't react. She's driving that car and she's like, yep, that makes sense.
Exactly, yeah. You know, and I think it's got that wonderfully sad and mournful Peter Boyle performance that I think he won an Emmy for. He was nominated for an Emmy for.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful, you know, and it's a real sadness that he's passed away, because I would have loved to have got him on the X-Cast to talk about that, playing Clyde Brookman. It's a fantastic episode. It's a harder episode in some ways, I think, to love than some of the others, because the others are a bit more, you know, showy, and things like Ose Chung is just hilarious and all that kind of thing. Whereas this one is probably the best writing I think Darren Morgan ever did, and I think it's a good for the show, and I think it's a good example of how the X-Files could really balance these two things. It could be sad, it could be weird, and it could be really funny, you know, really, really funny. And you could well find somebody who would just come and watch the comedy episodes of The X-Files. No, that's it. They just watch like about 10 of them. They're all just comedies.
You're probably sensing a theme with my ones that I like the really thought-provoking ones. So I guess I'd be suggesting for someone who was similar to me, which not everybody is. But
You were saying about the comedy episodes. That being said, I'm not really a fan of Ose Chung's myself. I mean, I do like Darren Morgan. He's a brilliant writer, but for me, that episode, it just doesn't work for me, really. But
and that's it. With comedy, though, it's so subjective, isn't it?
It is.
It really is.
I think with some of the comedic episodes, you do need to have an understanding of the show. Otherwise, it comes across as a bit surface light, almost.
Maybe I was so close to recommending
Just Sweat. Yeah, but you need to know, like, Clyde Brookman's is a great choice because it has that, it's got that depth, so you can really appreciate the comedy. Whereas in order to appreciate a comedic episode like Rain King, you need to have seen dark episodes to have that scale. And I love Clyde Brookman because it's so good at taking a story but showing the human heart, and I think the X-Files does that well. It did it with Paper Hearts too. It takes a story but shows you the real emotional fallout and the connections that people can make, and that's something unique about the show, I would say.
I think that's exactly why if new people can get past the sort of datedness of the technology, clothes or whatever, like, a lot of the themes are universal and last, so they tell a universal story through a particular situation, and once you get past that specific situation, then, you know, all the characterizations are very familiar.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of truth to that. I think it's a double-edged sword for some of the comedies. I think saying something like Je Sweat, I think, is a good example of how that one might not work as an entry point for the fact that it's funnier if you know the fact that Scully can't quite believe she's seeing an invisible body, you know, things like that. You know, she's like, oh, what's that? You know, and then it's hilarious when she gets those people in to have a look at it, and she puts her hand in the freezer and there's nothing there, and she's like, where is it? There's loads of little things like that. Or Mulder's little, the best thing about that, sorry, I'm going on a tangent. I think I might be doing Je Sweat as a commentary next year, but a commentary track, but it's just Mulder's little genie impression where he puts his arms together and goes boink. I just cry every time he does that.
I think that shows our age too. I think someone watching that now would have no idea what that was.
they wouldn't get it. Or when he when he does the stuff, everyone would be like, what's that? You know, but yeah, you're right. I think with the comedies, it depends, doesn't it? It depends on which one it is. But Clive Brookman is, I think, a fantastic choice to start someone off with this. A really different way of looking at it. But yeah, love it, love it. I'm glad we covered them. That's great. I'm going to finish us up then by going into very, very thorny waters, because I'm going into season 8,
which
I love.
I'm so glad you did.
Yeah, and yeah. Well, you asked me, Jessica, before this, didn't you? You said, because I was on the bubble with a couple of season 7 episodes as well. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go for patience in season 8, because I think season 8 is a different entry point. I think, honestly, you could almost come into the X-Files and enjoy them, I think, in that span between Patience and maybe Medusa, where you have Scully and Doggett investigating cases and there's almost no mythology, and it's just week after week after week. And that, I think, is one of the best runs of the show completely, because it takes the show back to the really chilling, scary kind of episodes that we haven't really had on the show since season 5, maybe earlier, actually. And that stretch, in part, reminds me of like season 2 in terms of weird and scary and creepiness. And I think it's a great stretch. And Patience, yeah, there are obviously serialised elements threaded in, because Mulder's not there and there are references to Mulder in that. So it's not a perfectly clean entry point, but at the same time, it's a first episode where Scully's trying to work with Doggett and you're starting to see their interaction. It's a solid case. It's a very simple monster kind of story, but there's a real sadness there. It's very evocative. It looks really good, that episode, I think. It's like, it's really dark and moody and mysterious. It's not a particularly wow pizzazz episode, but I really like Patience, and I think it's a good example of how season 8, and you know what, I think there would be an argument of putting a season 9 episode on this list. Not that I'm going to do that, but you know, I think that I want people to enjoy the Doggett years. Yeah. You know, because I think he's a great character, and season 8 particularly has so much to recommend. So yes, you wouldn't have a clue what was going on in mythology, but this kind of stuff, yeah. And then I'd say, you know, if you liked Patience, you'll love all the Mulder and Scully stuff from the early days that was similar, you know, before it became almost, in a nice way, a parody of itself, I guess, you know?
If I'd had 4 episodes to pick, I would have picked something from season 8. But once I'd done mythology, yeah, Grimm, and comedy, there was no room. but agree with everything you said. And even though parts of season 8, you'd lose some of the gravity of, I guess, Scully's characterization if you don't know what's come before, they stand on their own as well. And I've always really liked Patience. I've seen some really bad reviews of it, but I really enjoy it, and it's good for showing Doggett as just having great integrity as well. He's just like Scully in that he just wants to find out what's going on. He's not playing boy club games, and he doesn't have an agenda. And it does a really good job of setting that up and telling the story at the same time.
Yeah, season 8 tends to get a lot of love, doesn't it?
I think more so now than it did originally, though. People are able, yeah, to look back and appreciate, yes, sadly, it, whereas at the time...
Yeah. Yeah, it does now. Back in the day, it didn't, yeah.
Because all the shippers didn't like Doggett coming on, no, and it kind of screwed it all up. But no, it is a, yeah, very good season, yeah, very,
you know,
good.
And even I remember, and I wasn't a shipper back in the day, and I was never, like I've said, I'm never against it, but
Tony.
I've got soft in my old age, but... But no, I was more disappointed that Mulder wasn't around back then, you know, when I was first watching it.
Yeah,
I was like,
me too.
Oh, it's not the same without Mulder. And also, I was just obsessed with the mythology and I wanted to know where it was all going to go. So I didn't really appreciate Doggett, all these kind of episodes, as much back then. And I think now I'm just like, yeah, Doggett is such a great... And a lot of it's Robert Patrick, in fairness. You know, we talked about the actors and what they bring to it. I think he really took what was on the page and really made it his own. And he was just so good right from the very beginning. And... It is getting a lot more critical reevaluation, I think, now. And I'm glad, because, you know, I do really think that The X-Files at its best, and I sense you guys pretty probably agree for the most part, but I think The X-Files is at its best when it's both entertaining but also really chills you and leaves you, like, unnerved a bit by the end and thinking. And I think season 8 does that in a bit more than I think the show had done for a few years, certainly since the movie. In the same way, and I think I love it for that.
I had never thought of comparing it to season 2 until you mentioned it, but I think you're right, because you've got episodes like Roadrunners, and you've got episode, is it Invocation, where that little boy comes back and he hasn't aged, and they're very reminiscent of some of the episodes in season 2. Even if it's, you know, filmed in California, they feel dark and mysterious and foggy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, it gets back a little bit more of that Vancouver sense, while still being very, very sort of deserty based. You know, I mean, a lot of those season 8 episodes are very hot and arid, and you know, something like Roadrunners, which you could never have done in Vancouver, and it work in the same way. And that's a fantastic episode. But you're right, there is a mystery about it.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. It's like,
does anyone think that had they brought back Doggett and Monica Reyes into the new series, in series 10 and 11, it would have been any different? Or, you know, would you prefer the way it was at the moment? Or what are your thoughts on that?
That's a very big question.
It is a big question. And I tell you what, that's another podcast. We should come back and do that one, because that's fascinating.
I think for me, my issues with season 10 and 11 are how... I think there are fundamental issues with the way the myth arc was set up, that having... I wouldn't trust that having Doggett and Reyes back... I mean, Reyes was back, and I didn't like how that happened. So I wouldn't trust that the revival writers would stay true to Doggett's character or make use of either of them in the way that they could have. I think season 10 and 11 would have been a great opportunity to explore some of the way Monster of the Week can tie into Myth Arc in a more meaningful way, like they did with Wet-Wired and so on. And it was an opportunity missed for whatever reason.
I agree with everything you said about Doggett, and I would really like to have seen him back. Whether that would have made things better or worse, I don't know. There's too many factors to consider, I think. I never particularly was enamoured with the character of Monica Reyes so much, but she was back. Yeah, I really don't know.
It's a tough one, because it's also, I think, there's such a long time has passed. I think they are... I think Annabeth Gish was good in the sense that she didn't look vastly different from when she played Monica before, for one thing. And, you know, she's still really invested in that character, in the community around it. You know, she's been on the X-Cast, obviously. And patrons can listen to that one, and we will be releasing that during season 8 as well. And it's a great discussion. And she, you know, she's still very involved. Whereas Robert Patrick's kind of moved on a bit more.
Yeah.
And I think he would have potentially come back, I think, but he's not quite in that space anymore. So I don't think I think he might have been different. He looks a bit different now as well. So I don't know if they would have been able to recreate. I think they missed their shot there. I think they missed their shot to keep the X-Files going like Supernatural went on, say, and did like 15 seasons or whatever. I think there is another alternative universe where season 9 triggers off an entirely fresh non-Mulder and Scully era. You know, Gillian Anderson leaves at the end of season 9. She and Mulder maybe pop up every now and then, you know, for guest appearances, but you've got a whole new era. And I'm sad in a way that we never got it, because while the show is, yes, Mulder and Scully in many ways, and it's so identified with those characters, I think season 8 and some of season 9 shows what you could have done. And I think season 9 could have all... Season 9 is almost the season 1 of that new show, you know, where it's very patchy. But you do get some great episodes in that season. You know, there are some really good episodes, and they could have built on that, and they could have developed it, and they could have found the real niche between Doggett and Reyes and figured out what kind of stories they tell with those characters, and all like they did with Mulder and Scully. But sadly, the stars just weren't aligned at that point, you know, I don't think you could have ever recaptured that.
Yeah, helping me crystallise some of my thoughts in the background here. I think how well or how good season 10 or 11 is less to do with who's in it than how the characters are presented, the ones who are in it. So I feel like at season 8 we'd got to this natural evolution point where Mulder had almost grown up and moved on, and then at the end of season 9 and going into season 10, we kind of went back to the start again instead of moving on, like you were just saying. And I think perhaps that was the way to go. So it was, you know, people's problems with season 10 and 11 may be able to be boiled down to the fact that it was the wrong story to be telling rather than the wrong people in it. I don't know. That's just kind of what I'm thinking.
I feel like Chris Carter's way of operating it doesn't lend itself to today's storytelling. And you guys are talking about it in the podcast around seasons five and the film, and then season six, and how he just seems to have these cool ideas like shiny toys that he really wants to write in. So he does, and then drops them. And in order for a proper story to work after season nine, he would have to, in my opinion, become a lot more disciplined, become a lot more reflective of the long, what is the end point of this season? What is the end point of the next season? And how are we getting there? He would have had to become, he would have had to be Vince Gilligan rather than Chris Carter.
Or he could have done what he did in season eight and actually create a story that makes sense from within all through to existence, which is what we get. We get a season where that mythology is tight. You know exactly what, you can track that all the way through. And I think the problem with season 10 and 11, you're absolutely right, is that it's trying to do the show from 1996, 1997 again, basically. It's trying to just go back 20 odd years and do that exact same thing again. And everything's moved on, really. And it doesn't feel as natural. And what I loved it, don't get me wrong, I lapped it up. You guys might have listened to some of those podcasts.
Yeah.
I lapped it up at the time. I was excited. We were all excited. And I definitely enjoyed it in the moment. But when you look back now, it's just not the same, you know? No. And it's trying to capture something. And it's full of these Chris Carter ideas, that some of them which are genuinely brilliant. You know, I will defend some of the stuff in some of these My Struggles, because he's really tapping into stuff that, especially now, we're starting to see enter the popular consciousness, particularly conspiracy theory again, with all this QAnon nonsense and everything. He's really digging into some of that. And I think if you had the X-Files come back now, you would get a lot more down these rabbit holes of these lunatics who are bringing all of these fringe ideas into the mainstream and taking over politics with it and all this. But I think it's fascinating. I think it's not very cohesive. And I think that's why the natural evolution of the X-Files just didn't happen in the same way. I think you're absolutely right.
I really liked My Struggle too, though. And I feel like it gets, I think My Struggle 4 gets the worst reviews, but I think My Struggle 2 doesn't fare well. But I really like the fact that they had the bravery to say, okay, we've been talking about this for 10 seasons, let's see the end of the world. Yeah. And it was a shame that they did retcon it, but I loved how My Struggle 2 progressed.
Here's a question then. Let's finish off with this, a general question to all of you. Okay. Would you recommend seasons 10 or 11 as an entry point to the X-Files?
No, not for me. It's not the same. I can't really, break it down in so many ways, but for me, it's just not the same.
Because it is telling that none of us suggested any of those episodes.
Yeah. There are a few good stories, as you said, but no, I don't think for any entry point to get someone to get into it in 2016 and 2018, I certainly would. I'd go back to series one myself, but that's just me. It's just a completely different show. I get what they were trying to do, and like you said, it does try to go back to its roots from 1996. But I think as an entry point, no, not for me. I'd go back to series one myself.
Oh, I agree. I think it would be like jumping into the last chapter of a book. I think you do need to start near the beginning, especially. When
the characters are so well established by that point as well, aren't they? They're completely different characters.
Yeah, they really rely on a lot of what has come before. Yeah. So you need to watch what has come before. And I think it's not just that, you know, we're not happy with the way the stories were told or the stories that were told. Mm. I mean, I think it's quite obvious that the bulk of the episodes we've all picked come from early on. So, you know, you need to start early, I think, seems to be the general consensus. And then pick what you like and go from there.
And the will they, won't they, relationship, shippers, moments, you know, by then they're together. So it's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. You know, it's and that's kind of one of the pulls of the show for some people. Not all people, of course, but some people like that kind of element. There's nothing wrong with that. But for me, no, just like I said before, I think it's better to go back to the early seasons of the show, really.
I think the last seasons aren't as sophisticated. And I think if you look at an episode like Home Again, the elements around Maggie's death are done very, very well. And my personal opinion is the trash man is not a great X-File. It's like the trash man from Arcadia. You know, it's been done before and it's not done very well. And then to go from an episode like that into The Lost Art of the Forehead Sweat, if you're a new viewer, it's quite jarring. And so I just don't think it's as sophisticated a season as some of the earlier ones.
I find it interesting as well that none of us picked Home as one of our episodes.
Oh, I was very, very close to picking that.
It's
very close.
It's, you know, universally loved, isn't it? It's just, yeah, very.
But it's one of a kind, though. It's like you watch Home and there's nothing else like it. So is it a fair entry point?
But I think that's the point, isn't it? That in many ways, the favourites aren't necessarily always the right choices for these kind of episodes, you know? And I think there is overlap with many of the ones we've talked about today, but you're right in that not all of the great episodes are necessarily the ones that you'd start people off with, because it's all about trying to find, and I think we've covered it brilliantly, trying to find different doorways that lead into aspects of the X-Files that people will attach to and love and lot, and you know, and come in. Even this late on, you know, because there's no, you know, people. Yes, okay. If you watched it when it first came out, you might have a deeper attachment, but then not necessarily. Look at someone like Cortland, one of our other guests and patrons. Mm. She only started watching it like about 5 or 6 years ago, I think, and she loves it like we do. So it is. There are definite times and points and entry points you can do this, and I think it's trying to find whatever appeals to you as an audience member. And the X-Files is so multifaceted, there will always be different doorways that lead to different places. And I think that's the beauty of the show. Not every show has the ability to be able to even allow us to have this conversation, you know, like this.
Exactly.
And that's the great thing about it.
Yeah, I mean, during this lockdown period, I managed to get one of my friends into it.
Nice.
And she basically binged it from start to finish. Absolutely loved it.
Brilliant. Great stuff.
I've been trying to get her to watch it for years, but, you know. But yeah, well, now, I managed to get her to do it.
Well, now, well, you've done this already, but now for the rest of us, this is our challenge. We've got to use these episodes to get, get some new X-Files.
That's right, and absolutely.
Even better, get some new X-casters as well listening. Yeah. So, you know, if we can do two for one, that'd be a real win there. but yeah, this has been an absolute joy. Thank you guys for coming on. You've done so well with this and brilliant. Brilliant discussion, wonderful choices, so much that you've left me thinking about. So thanks so much.
You're welcome.
A real, real delight.
Thanks for having us.
Should we go?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for supporting the show and being such, you know, wonderful fans and being involved and everything like that. So it's wonderful. So why don't we go around the table and we can just see where any listeners might be able to find you if they want a little bit more of your X-Files wisdom. So Eleanor, what about you?
So I'm in the basement, as I've heard people say.
Cool.
And I also write some fan fiction on AO3. So I'm a little bit shy about that one. So I'll just leave it there if that's okay.
Oh, don't be. We love that. Like, you know, you need to get on. You get talking. You probably know Annie Flowers already, but you need to talk to Annie because she's like the fanfic.
Yes,
you know,
I know.
Her and Sarah.
I heard her on a recent podcast and sent her a message and said, oh my gosh, that's you.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. That's good. Because, like, don't be shy about fanfic. I'm from a fanfic background. Don't worry. It's awesome. Don't worry. It's all good. That's brilliant. Tell people where they can find your fanfic, maybe.
Okay. It's on AO3, and my name on AO3 is Tabitha Jean.
Okay. Look that up, guys. Look that up. That'd be brilliant. So, what about you?
You can find me on The Basement. I'm known as Cy James on there. It's my middle name. That's why it's called Cy James. Other than that, it's just my email address if you wanted to correspond with me on that. It's shodgson73@msn.com. Other than that. But yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It's been great. I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. Hopefully not for the last time with any of you, really. That'd be brilliant. Jessica, what about you?
Well, I'm actually on social media these days, which is amazing. So held out for 25 years or whatever it was. I'm in the basement as well, occasionally. I'm also on Twitter at JTMiske, so JTMiske, but I more look and like. I don't really tweet much. It's more to follow other people.
Perfectly acceptable use of social media, and probably the wisest in many ways, so fair play. Good stuff.
That's how I do it.
Yeah. You're probably better off. As everyone probably knows, you can find me at AJ Black Writer on Twitter and on Instagram and on Facebook. And, you know, you'll find more of what I'm up to on We Made This at WMT underscore network. That's our new Twitter handle. And we're also on Facebook there as part of the podcast network that we're on. And all the XCast stuff will be in the credits with, you know, your regular hosts and their dulcet tones telling you where to find where we are there. But thank you guys again. It's been amazing. Please let this not be the last time we all speak to each other about the X-Files, because I've had a great time. So I hope you have too as well.
Indeed.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us for another episode, everybody. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network, and the X-Files is not all we're discussing, believe it or not. So we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in a minute. But until then, remember, as always, trust no one.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Free with this month's issue.
What I'd like to say right at the start is, like, that's the first time I've ever listened to this song on headphones, and I don't like how close Fred Durst sounds.
It feels so, like, yeah, he's whispering it in your ear, doesn't it?
But, like, they've put some kind of weird little chorus effect on there, so his voice sounds really slimy as well, and it's like, oh, get the fuck out of my ear, Fred Durst.
That may be the Bluetooth connection and the internet connection.
No, no, because I remember hearing the voice from, like, you know, the TV speakers and stuff like that, and it definitely sounds like that, but it's just very fucking dry and in your ear, and it's it's properly on. ASMR Fred Durst is not a thing that I like.
I don't like ASMR anyway.
No. Some people do, but I can't imagine Fred Durst will be who they would be wanting to do it. No.
Life's milestones.
So, my fascination with Americans and embalming, am I just being weird and obsessive, or is it still a massive deal?
We had my mother embalmed when she died because we just thought it was the thing you had to do.
Right.
And usually embalming, if you're going to have an open casket, they have to be embalmed. Otherwise, they won't look so hot.
And they won't smell very nice either.
No, they would not. It would not be a pleasant experience for anyone. But if you're going to do that, I guess embalming is necessary.
Yeah.
And I don't like the idea. I mean, if I'm dead and you're drawing all my fluids out, then I'm definitely dead. So, you know, it is like taxidermy. I'm just on display for people to look at. I might as well be up on the wall.
Podcast 616. A Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast.
I was gone for 5 years and now I'm in a different reality. Whoa, what's happened there?
Luke's been blipped. Luke's been blipped. Here he is, Luke's been blipped. He's back again.
So, Luke, it's been 5 years. I've got a few things to catch you up on.
Yeah. What did he make to Loki season 6?
Great. Well, what are we on? Spider-Man 8 now, are we? With Sony?
Yeah, it's Miles Morales now, so that's all good.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network. The X-Cast and X-Files podcast was created by Tony Black and is produced and hosted by Carl Sweeney, Sarah Blair and Kurt North.
You can find the podcast on Twitter at @X_cast, on Facebook by typing in the X-Cast, and in our group, X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group, and on Instagram at the X-Cast Pod.
Don't forget, you can support the show by becoming a member on Patreon. Our patrons get early access to episodes, behind-the-scenes chats with our hosts and a thriving community of X-Files, and other premium interviews and specials. To find out more and subscribe, you can go to patreon.com/thexcast. That's patreon.com/thexcast.
We are also part of the We Made This podcast network, full of popular culture shows, including our Millennium series, The Time Is Now. You can find all of our shows at our website, wemadethispod.com, or via Twitter @wemadethispod.
Thanks for listening and keep watching the skies.